Adam lay with his wife Eve, and she became pregnant and gave birth to Cain. She said, "With the help of the Lord, I have brought forth a man." Later, she gave birth to his brother Abel. Now Abel kept flocks, and Cain worked the soil. In the course of time, Cain brought some of the fruits of the soil as an offering to the Lord. But Abel brought fat portions from some of the firstborn of his flock. The Lord looked with favor on Abel and his offering, but on Cain and his offering he did not look with favor. So Cain was very angry, and his face was downcast. Then the Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry? Why is your face downcast? If you do what is right, will you not be accepted? But if you do not what is right, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must master it." Now Cain said to his brother Abel, "Let's go out to the field." And while they were in the field, Cain attacked his brother Abel and killed him. Then the Lord said to Cain, "Where is your brother Abel?" "I don't know," he replied. "Am I my brother's keeper?" Then the Lord said, "What have you done? Listen, your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. Now you are under a curse and driven from the ground, which opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you work the ground, it will no longer yield its crops for you. You will be a restless wanderer on the earth." Cain said to the Lord, "My punishment is more than I can bear. Today you are driving me from the land, and I will be hidden from your presence. I will be a restless wanderer on the earth, and whoever finds me will kill me." But the Lord said to him, "Not so. If anyone kills Cain, he will suffer vengeance seven times over." Then the Lord put a mark on Cain, so that no one who found him would kill him. So Cain went out from the Lord's presence and lived in the land of Nod, east of Eden. Our second reading is from Hebrews chapter 12, verse 22. "But you have come to Mount Zion, to the heavenly Jerusalem, the city of the living God. You have come to thousands upon thousands of angels in joyful assembly, to the church of the firstborn, whose names are written in heaven. You have come to God, the judge of all men, to the spirits of righteous men made perfect, to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood that speaks a better word than the blood of Abel." Lastly, 1 John chapter 3, verses 11 to 12. "This is the message you heard from the beginning. We should love one another. Do not be like Cain, who belonged to the evil one and murdered his brother. And why did he murder him? Because his own actions were evil and his brother's were righteous."
We've been encouraging you to read together in your families, and us as a whole church doing the same thing. This book, The One True Story. And what we're doing for the two Sundays, maybe possibly also the Carols by Candlelight service, is looking at the reading that was kind of for today. So if you haven't done it today, then that's probably good, because then you won't know what's coming entirely. If you have done it today, then it'll be an easy sermon to listen to. And if you haven't done it today, maybe you don't have to now, because you can listen to the sermon instead. But that's what we're going to do for these two Sundays, is to do what the reading was for the day. I hope you've enjoyed, those of you who have been reading it, I hope you found it good. I was chatting with somebody yesterday who found it spectacularly interesting yesterday, the one about the dragon slayer from Revelation. It was all kind of new stuff and very interesting. So I do encourage you, if you've bought the book, don't just have the book on the shelf, but actually read it each day. And I am putting a summary on the website under the sort of One True Story picture, if you see it there. Every day, a little kind of three or four line summary of what the reading was about that day, just to kind of keep us going. And if you want to make comments on that, anything that you observed, then do that. If you're into Facebook, there's a post on Facebook about it. So if you want to comment on Facebook about anything that you see from the readings, then please do that. And let's encourage one another in that way. It's called The One True Story because it's about the Bible story. Last Saturday, not yesterday, the one before, there was great excitement, greatly exaggerated that point, of the Christmas lights being switched on in Haywardsheath High Street. The only exciting thing about it, actually, was that they closed the road, which was rather an interesting phenomenon. That the whole of, is it called South Street, that the main high street, isn't it? It was totally closed, and I thought, wow, what an interesting idea, generally. Why don't we just pave it all? I was thinking of getting a paver that sort of evening to do it, and then it would all be done, and putting bollards up at the end. You know, people do things like that, don't they, overnight? But that was the only interesting thing. The lights themselves were so unspectacular. There was a crazy procession of a donkey and two llamas, I think it was, that well-known Middle Eastern animal, some people on stilts playing guitars, which kind of illustrates the muddle that is Christmas. You know, what would you like to get this Christmas? There are these figures that you could get, or I think what's slightly cooler is actually these ones. What a fascinating bunch. You know, the thing about, I don't know whether that's Playmobil or Lego. Is that Lego? Lego, yeah. The detail on both of those, Playmobil and Lego, and you know, all that kind of stuff. They were, you know, I was actually drawn in by this picture. I keep looking at it, you know, thinking, oh, yeah, and they've got this stuff down here and stuff. But it kind of illustrates the muddle, doesn't it? You know, these are Christmas figures. These are Christmas figures. I don't know who's mythical, who's real, who's magical, who's made up. The Christmas decorations don't show. If you walk around the orchards, try and find anything other than a star that speaks to you about Jesus, and you'll be hard-pressed to do that. It's all kind of dumbed down in that way. So it's really refreshing, because I love Christmas, but I'm always struggling with the sort of blurring of the fantasy and the fact. And it's great to read through this book and to remind ourselves that Christmas is not just a great story, although it is a great story, but Christmas is part of a bigger story. And more than being part of a big story, it's part of a true big story. And if we're Christians this morning, we're caught up in a big, true story. In fact, the one true story. And it's really encouraging, kind of over time, rather than just kind of concentrated onto one morning on Christmas morning, to think about that together, to really encourage ourselves in the big story. Well, as part of that, we are looking this morning at Genesis 4 and how it's referred to in the New Testament. So we're going to start in that text that was read to us from Genesis 4, page 6, on the church Bibles. Christmas is about a birth. Of course it's about a birth. You know that. But here in Genesis 4, fascinatingly, we have a birth, and perhaps you don't always kind of notice because you're rushing through Genesis, thinking about all the various other things coming, but here is the first birth. Never before had there been the pains, the movement, the growing, the swelling, the incontinence. Everything that comes with being pregnant. I'm not saying all pregnant women are incontinent, by the way, but it just came into my head as maybe another description, but probably that'll haunt me for a few weeks now. But it just occurred to me that whole experience of the pain of childbirth had never been experienced before, had it? In the history of the world, never. And it was by Eve. And it's no wonder that she gives birth and there's some kind of sense of, I don't know, awesomeness. She became pregnant and gave birth to Cain. She said, "With the help of the Lord, I have brought forth a man." Ah! And there it is. There's a baby. The first ever baby. And we're going to call him Cain. And God's helped me to bring him forth. And we've got such hope and expectations. Maybe the fall wasn't so bad after all. You know, we disobeyed God. We ate of the fruit. We chucked out the garden. But God's still speaking to us. And maybe it's going to be all right. I brought forth a man. It's a baby boy. Wow. Such hope and expectations, an amazing event. And she gives birth to Abel as well, who's kind of a footnote. Abel becomes a livestock farmer and brings his sacrifices, his gifts, his worship to the Lord. Cain is an arable farmer, fruits of the field, and he brings an offering to the Lord as well. And we can see from the text that the Lord favours the offering from Abel. Verse Verse 3, in the course of time, Cain brought some of the fruits of the soil as an offering, but Abel brought fat portions from the first flock of his firstborn of his flock. And the Lord looked with favor on Abel and his offering, but on Cain and his offering, he did not look with favor. Seems a bit mean of God, doesn't it? Who wouldn't like a nice juicy apple or a sprig of sweet corn? Whatever you call a lump of sweet corn. A cob of sweet corn. Thank you. Yes, I need lots of help. And it seems unreasonable of God until you think about a couple of things. One is, I suppose, the matter of principle, that what God is establishing here, and he's already established it with the slaying of the animals in order to provide the clothing for Adam and Eve, that because death has entered, death will need to be part of the worship of God, the giving of a life in order to appease the wrath of God, as we were thinking about last weekend. So there's that principle, which is why God chooses Abel's offerings over Cain's offerings. So there's that. But there's also something else involved here, I think, which is that Abel, it appears very clearly, brings the fat portions, the best. Whereas Cain just brings some. And I think we're supposed to see that contrast. Abel seems to have a heart of worship, and Cain does not. He seems to be grudging in it. And you can see that through the way that the Lord then speaks to him and says, because he's sullen, because he's bringing the wrong offering and God's not accepting it. And God gives him the opportunity. He doesn't say, okay, you've had it, it's over for you. He says, if you do the right thing, then you'll be blessed. Just do what I'm asking you to do. And we can see that Cain's attitude isn't right, can't we? Because he doesn't change. He doesn't say, oh, great, thanks for revealing that to me. Come on, Abel, I'm going to work the land as well and work the land for livestock as well and bring some fat portions the same as you. That's not what he does. And of course, it gets worse than that. Cain's response is first to pout, and then quite shockingly, quite brutally, he murders his brother, verse 8. He does it in a way to perhaps try and avoid the presence of God. We don't know quite how God was appearing or kind of localized at this time, but it seems they're going out in the field in order to get away, for it to be a kind of secret place. So, you know, they go out to the field together. Maybe Abel thinks, oh, good idea, perhaps he's going to come out with me and we're going to think about livestock and changing our worship habits and so forth. But they go out together and he kills him. It's terrible. Just the first baby, but the first murderer. And he murders his brother, and it's a shocking event. And then God speaks, verse 9, where is your brother Abel? And he answers in a very surly way, I don't know. Am I my brother's keeper? But not only is the attitude of his answer wrong, content's wrong, isn't it? He's lying. I don't know. Yeah, you do. You know exactly where he is. Because you buried him. You killed him. You know. Don't say, I don't know. You're lying to God. You're answering God back. And so shocking it is, because it was his brother. We get the repetition of brother a number of times. I think 6 times in these few verses. It's all about the brother, the brother, the brother. But it's the brother that he murders, the brother that he's not the keeper of, the brother that he apparently doesn't know where he is. But it's his brother that he murdered. And so he's judged by God. He's sent east. And east in Genesis is all about being further away from God's presence each time. As they travel east, they're getting further away from God. And God is gracious to him. Doesn't allow him to be a complete refugee, but he does move him east. And verse 16, he lives in the land of Nod, east of Eden. I want us to particularly focus on verses 9 and 10 this morning, thinking about the questions and the answers. And to think about the big story, here's a couple of things. First of all, Christmas is about a better brother. Christmas is about a better brother, and that brother is Jesus. You see, we failed to be our brother's keeper. It's interesting that we always want to ask God questions, don't we? You know, you talk to somebody who's not a Christian, they got loads of questions for God. The interesting thing in Genesis so far, we're only a few chapters in, who asks all the questions? It's God. God's got lots of questions to ask us. In Genesis 3, God asks, "Where are you, Adam, and what have you done?" and those things. And here in Genesis 4, God asks. God is gracious in his asking because, of course, he knows. He wants to draw out the truth. He wants to draw out repentance. God asks us this morning, "Are you your brother's keeper?" And he wants us to think about it, but it is God in the end who asks the questions, and it's us who have to answer. And so he asks, "Where's your brother?" And there's Cain's famous impertinent answer. Isn't it annoying when someone answers a question with a question? Yes, it is. It's what you say, which is an answer. You could just say, "Why is that?" And then we can go on forever. But that's what Cain does. He doesn't answer the question. He answers with a lie and then another question. He doesn't answer directly. "Am I my brother's keeper?" He asks questions of God. And you see, in all reality, the question was seeking to deflect from the truth that he killed his brother. He had not been his brother's keeper. Terrible irony in that question, "Am I my brother's keeper?" Which, on the one hand, seems kind of reasonable. Perhaps he wasn't responsible totally 100% for the life of his brother and the well-being of his brother, but he'd done much worse than not be his brother's keeper. He'd been his brother's harmer. That word keeper is really akin to the word for guardian, for protector. And not only had he not protected his brother Abel, he'd actually been the perpetrator of evil against his brother. Matthew Henry says it like this: "Here, malice in the heart ends in murder by the hands. Cain slays Abel, his own mother's son, whom he ought to have loved, the younger brother, whom he ought to have protected, the good brother, who had never done him any wrong. What fatal effects were those of our first parents' sin, and how must their hearts have been filled with anguish? Observe the pride, unbelief, and impenitence of Cain. He denies the crime as if he could conceal it from God. Murder is a crying sin." And what Cain is doing is what we do. Isn't that how John uses it? He talks about love in that wonderful set of letters about love that we heard read for us earlier. And in talking about love, he says, "Do not be like Cain." You see, a failure to be our brother's keeper is a failure of love. Now, of course, we're not responsible for every action of every person in the whole world to protect everybody. But for those that we are in relationship with, there is a duty. But more than that, it's just a symbol of our failure to protect love. Our failure to be our brother's keeper means that we don't love as we should. And that is how the whole world is. We've not done a good job. Humanity has not done a good job. It's not like Cain was a one-off. You know, he was a difficult child, and we all have some of them, but you know, the others were going to turn out much better. There was Seth, there was children of the promise, there were other offspring. God in his mercy has preserved humanity up to this point, but none of us have done much of a better job than Cain. Across the world, there is brutal exploitation. Listening to an interview with Gillian Anderson, who's in a new film, which apparently is based on a true thing that happens, which is about the Nepalese, in Nepal, the sex industry in Nepal, where people are taken from the villages, young girls taken from the villages, and they're kept in what are effectively brothel prisons in the cities, obviously with the promise of money, but they never return to the villages with the money. We've heard this week about the exploitation of children by some people in some football clubs. We have not done a good job of being our brother's keeper, have we? We haven't protected the vulnerable. Do you know there are 329 million new £5 notes in circulation? The new plasticky ones. I don't like them much, but I can see the value of them. Well, they're worth £5, but I mean, I can see the value of them in terms of... I can see the value of them in terms of maybe they last longer and they've got more security features and all those kind of things. But, yeah, my brain's only half engaged this morning, so bear with me. Somebody calculated, because there's been all that fuss about tallow, there's traces of tallow in them, you know, from cows. And someone calculated that for all 329 million new £5 notes currently in circulation, do you know how many cows it would take to provide enough tallow for those?
Half a cow,
yes. It's a well-documented thing on Facebook and so forth. But I thought it was rather a fun fact. There are 100,000 signatories kind of against this tallow traces being in the £5 notes. There are 200,000 terminations of unwanted babies every year. 200,000 terminations. I don't care about £5 notes that much. I didn't write it down, but there are loads and loads of cows slaughtered every year for eating. But amazing. That is a headline news. Now, partly it's headline news because it's a kind of silly story, but you know, there are people protesting. There's a petition. There's Hindu temples that are now going against it. There's a vegetarian restaurant that's now refusing to accept them and everything else. So much interest in a trace of a bit of animal fat. Virtually no interest in the babies that are killed. We have not done a good job of being our brother's keeper. We look after cows better than we do babies. But it's not just out there, is it? It's in me. You know, you look at Cain's answer and you think, he's a bit rude to God. And then you think, yeah. You know what, I've answered God back in that way. I've had that kind of heart with God. I've answered God back and said, what are you asking me for? What do you want me to do? What do you expect me to do about it? I've answered God trying to deflect his questions. I don't want to know his questions. I want to do my own thing. I've answered God. I've rebelled against God. We're all naturally traveling east, away from Eden. We've not done a good job of being our brother's keeper. But Jesus is the ultimate older brother, the ultimate bigger brother. See, thousands of years after Cain, another baby was born. There was another birth event, and this was someone who would be just like us in every respect, except he doesn't sin. He doesn't inherit the guilt. He doesn't inherit the bias. He won't grow up to be like Cain. He will be the big brother we always wanted. He will be the ultimate, perfect, older brother. Eve's son Cain, he was born with hope, but it all ended in disappointment and anguish. Mary's son's not going to disappoint. Mary's son is not going to repeat our mistakes, but he's going to rectify them. And the Christmas story is a story of a brother who is better than Cain, who fulfills those words in 1 Corinthians 13. He always loves. He always protects. He's his brother's keeper. For all our failure to be our brother's keeper, he is our brother's keeper. He enters our world in order to be our brother's keeper, to be the perfect older brother. Is he your brother? Are you in Christ? Is your destiny bound up with him? Or are you still caught up with the sinful line of Cain? Are you in Christ? And if you're a Christian this morning, what Jesus calls us to do, it's what John says to us, don't be like Cain, be like Jesus, the perfect older brother. Show love like Jesus, protect like Jesus, persevere like Jesus, be trustworthy like Jesus, forgive like Jesus. Be like Jesus, Christian. This month and every month, this Christmas month, be like Jesus. Be the ultimate older brother. Seek to be like him. But also, Christmas is about a better sacrifice. It's about a better brother, but it's also about a better sacrifice, a sacrifice that speaks a better word. You see, Abel's blood, it condemns, doesn't it? Eve's second son didn't disappoint in so much as his character, although we know that he wasn't perfect. But the disappointment was not so much in his character, but in his frailty. There have been so many tragic, seemingly pointless deaths, haven't there? So much blood has been shed, and maybe just very, very occasionally you could see maybe there was an outcome that was slightly good out of it, but in many, many, many cases, just pointless, futile. And especially in terms of murder, I can't think of a good outcome that comes from murder, but really all death is meaningless. All it really does is underline the reality of sin. We die by murder, we die by old age. What God said would happen if Adam and Eve disobeyed is happening, and we die. And what God says to Cain is, listen. Listen to the blood of Abel. Listen. Your brother's blood is crying out to condemn you. But I tell you what, this morning, Abel's blood cries out to condemn me, and it cries out to condemn you. Because of that first point, we have not been our brother's keeper. In our hearts, we have murdered so many times, and we have turned our back on God, and we have not brought the sacrifices that he deserves. Abel's blood speaks to condemn us. Of course, it condemns brutality and violence right across the world. But it's not just about the world. It condemns us too. Abel's blood condemns, but Jesus' blood reconciles. Jesus' blood reconciles. You see, you need to do more than just listen to the blood of the oppressed that cries out for justice, more than just listen to Abel who condemns us, more than just realize that we are not only victims of sin, we are also perpetrators of it. But we need to do more than that. We need to listen to the blood of Jesus. As we had read in Hebrews 12, verse 23, we've come to Mount Zion, to the church of the firstborn, whose names are written in heaven. You've come to the judge of all men. You've come to God, this God who condemns, who sends Cain east. But amazingly, we're coming back. We're not going east. We're going west. We're coming back to God. You have come to God, he says. And then verse 24, to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood that speaks a better word than the blood of Abel. Isn't that a great way of thinking about it? Blood that speaks a better word. Abel's blood. What does it do? It condemns, it describes the sinful world in which we live. It epitomizes everything that's wrong. That's what Abel's blood does. It condemns the world, it condemns us. What does Jesus' blood do? It brings us, it reconciles us to God, it sends us back into the presence of God. And Christmas is the story of a better Abel. Jesus enters our world for his death to have purpose, to not be another tragic murder as it was, not another unjust, unlawful killing, not some malpractice that eventually there's an inquiry about and people say, oh, sorry about that. No, no, his death will be full of purpose. And it will speak a better word, and it speaks a better word to you this morning. It speaks a word of justice satisfied. It speaks a word of people reconciled. It speaks a word of hope in the face of death. It speaks a word of love to the unlovely. Will you this morning put your faith in Jesus? Will you this morning listen to the better word that is spoken to us by the death of Jesus? Absolutely, this Christmas we want to seek to be the better brother that we can be. We want to seek to be our brother, our sister's keeper. We want to be like Jesus. This Christmas, at all time, we want to put an end to all forms of oppression in our own hearts and lives, and to seek to influence the world to do that, to try and make the world a place where we do keep and guard and protect other people. But this Christmas, we want to put our trust in the one who's the better brother, whose sacrifice speaks a better word. Will you do that?